Welcome to Fright School. Are you ready? Class is in session. Welcome back to Fright School. Hello, Joe.
Hi, Joshua.
How are you doing?
I'm hanging in there, girl.
You are hanging in there. Look at you go. You know, another
sinuses.
Day. Yeah,
sinuses. Sinuses pressures.
Huh.
The sinuses, the title of the episode is Sinuses Pressures. Nothing to do with anything, but yeah.
All right. That's okay. Awesome.
I feel it. It's sad because it's like it's the weather's starting to get nicer, so it's getting a little warmer.
Yeah.
Which means that, you know, allergies and all of that stuff get kicked up for me. But you know, I just have to stay grateful because we're not on the East Coast where it's freezing.
Yeah. So, absolutely.
Sorry about it.
It's okay, Joe. You're allowed your reality. You're allowed your experience. That's what we're here to talk about.
I appreciate it. Thank you for validating. Thank you for validating.
You're not invisible to us.
Yes.
Yeah. And look at that. Disembodied voice showed up before introduction.
Surprise!
But that's all right, because she lives by her own rules, and she's not here to be told what to do. So, yes, today we do have a special guest. That's her laughing. Her name is Marcella Maggio. She is a youth mentor and professional trusted adult. She has an incredible business called It's My Life, all about helping people deal with their ACEs, which she'll get into, modeling resilience and working to make people better so that the world is better. You know, they're healing. So welcome, Marcella.
Thank you so much, Joshua. Thank you so much, Joe. I'm so happy to be here and love that introduction. Thank you. Can I take you around with me?
Yeah. I'm very excited for this. Very excited for this.
Yeah. I'm very excited. We wanted to have Marcella on. We are wrapping up. This is the final episode in our Tainted Love series. We've done some cool movies examining the horrors of love. And you've made that your business.
Yes, I have.
In a way. And so we thought it'd be kind of cool to have you be on this final. Not final. We'll do other. You know, we'll reference this series again, I'm sure. There's still lots of horror films out there about love. And hopefully we'll continue to make it to more Valentine's, you know, days. So we'll have others to talk about. But I thought it'd be fun to have you on to talk about a new film. This is a Fright School field trip episode. We went to see the new film The Invisible Man, so we'll get into that in the second part of the episode. But first, what's going on? What are people doing? What's been happening?
Candyman trailer.
Yes. Did you see it?
Yes,
it looks so
tasty. Good. yes
it's delicious. Now let's make sure that we say her name. Nia DaCosta, the director.
The actual director.
The director of this film is Nia DaCosta. It is produced and written by Jordan Peele. So it has his, you know, and I think his company, Monkey Paw.
Yes, was in the, yeah.
But it is being directed by Nia DaCosta, black woman. Let's make sure to say her name.
Yes.
And I'm glad you do, because sadly, admittedly, I found that out through a meme.
Oh, yeah.
On Facebook.
Yes.
So there you go.
Probably one I shared or somebody shared.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yes. So it's not getting she's not getting the representation that she deserves. That is for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, it's just going to happen. It's like, you know, so many times when somebody puts, you know, somebody who's out there decides, you know, when they're a big name and they decide to stamp something with their production, it just kind of people. You know, they're just going to attribute it. And because he did Get Out and Us, you know, I just think that people are going to assume that he's...
Well, he's the lead singer of the band now, right? That's what it is that we know everybody else is in the band too.
Right.
But they just don't have as much of a name and voice and
So, yeah, I think it's important that people share, you know, make sure we're correcting people and let them know.
Like,
hey, and not to say that it's not important. I mean, he's writing on it. He's producing. Obviously, he's bringing it out there. But he's put the direction in somebody else's perfectly capable hands.
Yeah. It looks
like by that trailer.
Oh, that was absolutely
exciting.
Yeah, I heard what you were talking about in the theater, Joshua, where it was like it's giving you like Freddy 2, mm-hmm. Nightmare 2 vibes.
Yeah, it was giving me a few different things. But yeah, just kind of some of the things where they were showing like really quick snatches or snatches. I don't know if that's the word I was looking for.
Snapshots.
Snapshots. Yeah. You know, just real quick flashes. That's a better word. Flashes of like imagery of like, you know, the main... actor like in the mirror, and it's like his, you know, looked like he was Candyman, you know, in the reflection. Mm-hmm. So it just kind of gave me that little bit of Freddy's revenge, or mm-hmm. you know, the gay one. That's what I call it. The gay Freddy.
The gay Freddy.
Yes, I'm looking for Candyman Bakery and desserts.
Yes. Delish. I'm glad that Tony Todd looks like he's still attached to this. Vanessa Williams, well, not that one, the other one.
Vanessa A. Williams.
Vanessa A. Yeah. Williams is attached to this one, which, you know, is basically playing the same character that she played like 30 years ago.
Yeah, yeah. So, wow. You know, I don't know what his name is. Do you know the actor that's playing Anthony?
Abdul-Mateen. I think it's Yusuf Abdul-Mateen. Yeah. He was also from... yes, Yaha Abdul-Mateen. He is... he was also in The Get Down on Netflix, which I watched. He played Cadillac on The Get Down. So, yeah.
Ah,
yeah, he's a good actor. He's really good.
He's playing Anthony McCoy, who was the infant that Helen saves in the original Candyman. Candyman kidnaps him, like frames Helen for the murder mm-hmm. of him and the dog, and you know, the poor little dog's head. Mm-hmm. And so she saves him from like a burning fire at the end of it. So yeah, they've got the original actress who played Anne Marie coming back to play his mother again. It just looks incredible. I'm actually very, very excited for it. And, you know, they gave us some Beyonce, Destiny's Child.
They gave us Say My Name. I was like, yeah, yes.
And what I liked about that was kind of interesting is instead of like using like a cover that was like creepy, like it's the original, right? Mm-hmm. Like that's a mm-hmm. remix of the original song.
Yeah. Instead of like Beyonce, like redoing it in a different way, the way she did with Crazy in Love for the 50 Shades movies.
Ah, yeah.
Or to see like Annie Lennox doing I Put a Spell on You, right?
Right. Yeah,
this
yeah.
is just a remix of it, which is such a cultural thing
yeah.
to do. So
yeah. So yeah, I'm very thrilled. I can't believe we have to wait till June to see it.
Yeah.
So.
I think I put in my I posted in Horror Movie Night when they posted in the group when they posted the trailer, I said that my hook was dripping because it's very it was
ready.
Oh, ready. I'm it's ready for it. It's good. I also think it's like it's kind of giving me it's a little gay. I mean, it's I'm getting a, like a little queer.
You're getting a queer vibe from
I'm getting a queer, I mean, vibe. Yeah, because there's like a, you know, a monster deep inside of us.
Mm.
Yeah. Mm. We'll see
how it
reads when we get there. But yeah, I'm very excited for that. So, what else? What else has been going on? Anybody see anything recently? Read anything?
Actually, just recently, I caught an old rerun of The Shining, and mm-hmm. Staying at my mom's right now, and it was interesting because of the fact that she hasn't seen it. She doesn't remember seeing it since probably when we were kids. And right away, she's like, oh my gosh, how old is this movie? We found out here it is, 1980 and such.
Yeah, it's celebrating 40 years this year. Yeah.
Right, absolutely. You know, and as you're watching it, you know, you're thinking about that psychological, you know, thriller, and which is something, interestingly enough, that we watch today. But, the makings of a madman, you know, and, mm-hmm. and what, you know, what that looks like and such. And I'm really excited and looking forward to the movie from Danny Torres' perspective now, right? I want to see that.
Dr. Sleep, you mean?
Right.
You haven't seen it yet?
No, yeah, no, I haven't. Okay. Yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah. Is it? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm really excited because, and and I have been away from a lot of movies. You know, right now I have a toddler. She's three. There's a lot of things that I have not had the opportunity to watch that I would love to. But unless it's, you know, cartoon.
Paw Patrol. Or,
exactly. You know. I did catch the Addams Family. So there you go, right? So I was able to do that much.
Yes.
But otherwise, I've been away from it. And so, yeah, it just took me back to that a little bit as far as... Again, the makings of a madman. Did you get that at all from this new movie? Like, is there any lingering of Jack in him?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah?
Absolutely.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Ooh, again, it's still like we've been in this...
the monster inside of us, right? Yeah. Right?
I think we've been in, and what we're seeing in a lot of horror right now is like these meditations on generational trauma.
Mm-hmm,
you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so there is. It's interesting how Jack, Danny, as an adult, starts to see his father a little bit more clearly.
Oh,
you know, and
okay.
There's like
there's some empathy there.
Yeah, because like it starts out like so it's based on a novel as well that Stephen mm-hmm. King wrote, which was fantastic. I really enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun. It read like a horror film. It moved very fast. It reminded me of early stuff, like, you know, some of his earlier work that, you know, just had like a drive to it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was very enjoyable. But, you know, he's like an alcoholic and he's, you know, suffering all the same. It's that the echoes, you know, of like
yes.
the same, you know, problems that his father went through. And so going through that and trying to get clean, mm-hmm. you know, kind of brings some clarity about like his father to him.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah. So it's very interesting. I highly recommend it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I just watched it the other day. I bought the director's cut. So mm-hmm. I don't know how different it is from the theatrical version. Mm-hmm. It didn't seem to have that many more minutes added mm-hmm. to it. But you know, that's the thing, a minute in a film can
right.
add so much, but I highly recommend it, you know, especially for
wonderful.
The work that you do, you
yeah.
know, because The Shining horror in that realm, The Shining, this Dr. Sleep is absolutely mm-hmm. a reflection of those, childhood traumas and
mm-hmm.
how they
mm-hmm.
live with us. Well, I mean, he's in his 40s,
right.
you know, so.
Right. And it does, it, you know, and that's the thing is that, just like, going back to the monster inside of us type of thing, the body doesn't forget. So even mm-hmm. if we do our best to tell ourselves that we have outgrown it, we've outlived it, you know, just move on and such, that's where it shows up in different diseases and, you know, just ailments in our body, even from the foods that we eat, right? Because we're just trying to numb that trauma and that pain. So yeah you're absolutely right. It's going to eventually find us if we don't deal with it, right?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I love that you wore a Shining shirt today. You got the twins.
Yes.
That's awesome.
Yes, I have the twins, and they definitely remind me of, you know, we're taught the stranger danger and
right.
such, right? All the time, and when I think about little Danny, you know, his mission is basically to warn everybody of what they can't see because they've been told that it's not really there.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I love it because those are, you know, the first people he encounters and you think that, oh, there it is. That's the scary part. This is the bad part of the movie is that the, you know, the place is haunted. They're going to get this kid and blah, blah, blah. And then as it builds and builds and builds, you find out that no, they are just messengers too. Right. It's really the dad all along. It's somebody that's the closest to him. So, yeah, I just look at it as a lot of times these monsters are really just messengers of what's really going on.
Oh, my gosh. Well, we'll have to like go back and redo The Shining now. That's some good perspective there. If you do, my dear listener here,
mm-hmm.
if you do want to revisit our Shining episode, it is episode 14, Killing Your Family and Other Good Ideas. So feel free to revisit that
it.
And then rewatch The Shining and watch Dr. Sleep. And maybe we'll have you back on in the future to talk about both. And that's a very interesting example that all of these monsters are warning him of the real danger.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that's a very interesting kind of flip on that. So anything else? Joe, what have you been doing? What have you been watching?
Well, I was going to say, controversially, I prefer Dr. Sleep over The Shining.
Ooh.
So
yeah.
Well, you definitely
I'm,
should
ooh,
watch
I'm
it.
Definitely going to watch it, yes.
What am I watching? I am continuing I'm on a binge of consuming old media. So
yeah.
I am currently rewatching episodes of Boy Meets World on Disney+.
Oh.
All right, girl. Yeah.
That's as scary as it gets.
Yes, there we go. Pretty much as scary as it gets. Yeah, I've just like I'm kind of reached a place where it's like nothing new is really exciting me.
Mm-hmm.
So I think later tonight I am gonna start a new show. It's called Hentified. On,
oh yeah,
Netflix.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's about gentrification and in a Latinx family. So
they've had like that massive loss, you know, with their writer.
I didn't know that. No.
Oh yeah, she. What was her name? I haven't seen it yet, but. Sorry, Joe, giving you bad news.
I
like,
know. Dang. Well, now I know that this is the only season that I'll care about then.
No, I mean, I think that they'll have other seasons possibly, but she, of course, my phone keeps correcting it.
Of course it is. Just an anglicized name.
Camila Maria Concepcion. She was a writer and trans Latina advocate. Died by suicide. She was one of the writers on the show. So very sad that kind of came out. So
yeah, I mean, Silvio Horta, who created the American version of Ugly Betty, he also passed as well too.
Yeah.
We gotta take care of our POC people, man. Yeah. Gotta take
this
care
is
of
very,
our,
yeah, very
our,
tragic.
Our very our creative POC people.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing, just hearing what you think about it. Cause I haven't, I've kind of been in the same place. I think, just like personally, it's been tough to kind of consume new media. You know, I did see, I did watch the first episode of Drag Race started. So that started last night.
I saw that.
Yeah, I watched that. That was very amusing. I'm very curious to see how this season goes. It was fun. It was a lot. They had those girls doing everything. They had to do like a two-look fashion show. They had to come up with a rap song and choreography the same day, plus another runway look. It was nuts.
Did they get rid of half the people too? Like,
right. It was cray. And they changed up some of the structure and rules. So I'm excited. So we'll see. Yeah, we'll see how it goes.
They can't change the queens that come because they're all the same carbon copies as other past queens.
You know, it's interesting because it's like once they get to that point, because, you know, they do all the promo work, I think, after the season's over. So then, of course, they've all had time to like go and like really get themselves together. And they do all have the same face like in the promos, but they don't on the show. Like I saw a lot more differentiation. You know, plus they're all in like red, white, and blue, you know, and all the promos. And, you know, they're just this homogenous look anyways. So I was worried about that. But seeing the show, they really did have some good standing apart from each other. What I was going to say is I've been kind of in the same mode. So I've been really rewatching because I'm in this writing class. I'm taking this like creative nonfiction class, which is like working on memoir or working on like journalism, you know, kind of type writing. I've been doing a lot of like archaeology of the self, you know, so I'm spending a lot of time. Like I just started rewatching Millennium, which was like a series that was an offshoot of The X-Files.
Mm.
It was really good and creepy and, you know, kind of came out of that whole era of like, we're seven, like that kind of style. Mm-hmm. So it's just it's a really cool series. So I'm finding myself going back to all this stuff that I loved when I was like a teenager, cause I'm writing a lot about that time period in my life. And so, so haven't been doing too much new stuff.
It's just like, I feel more and more, it's like, I want to be comforted.
Yeah. That I know how the story is going to end.
Yeah, yeah. I know how it's going to end. I want to be taken back to better memories and, you know, as this political cycle marches through, you know, I want now more than ever my like media diet to be, one that is like half horror news and then half like just, you know, comfort bubblegum.
Yeah. Stuff that's just kind of comforting, I think is a good way to put it. Mm-hmm. You know, just sure. Mm-hmm.
I showed my special man friend, I showed him My Best Friend's Wedding, the movie with Julia Roberts.
Horrifying.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Terrifying.
Very terrifying. In many ways, it doesn't. In a few ways, it doesn't hold up, but in many ways, it does. And I think, to give it its credit, it had a like openly queer character who his whole, you know, he does play a like magical homo function in it, but he is like out and proud and partnered and, you know, just kind of there to support the main and, you know, wreak havoc. But that was not something that you really saw, you know, Rupert Everett, you know, God bless him. That was not something you really saw in the time in the mid 90s. So
that's true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. I posted an article about that, of like finding more LGBTQ stories that happen after coming out. You know, life doesn't end at coming out.
Yes, and I really appreciate it. I haven't read the article, but yeah.
Well, of course not.
You know, I don't read. I read articles.
There's some pictures.
Yeah, thank you. I read articles. I don't read novels. I appreciated what you said because it's like, yeah, we should have more representation of older queers and life after that because. How it was phrased in your quote was beautiful, where it's like, if you're talking about if you prioritize or you put such a premium on like being youthful when a lot of us had our youth like snatched from us, or we never had the ability to be children in the same way that like cis hetero folks had the ability to be. So
yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Good. Read that article.
Yeah, it was fantastic. It was
listener.
It was a good read. I'll try to remember to repost it on the Fright School page, because like we do talk a lot about queer horror and like getting to that place where it's like, okay, we have somebody who is already happy and whole, quote unquote. You know.
I just dropped something.
That's okay. You're allowed.
I'm sorry.
It happens, but you did wake Hemlock up. So anything that happens from here out is your responsibility.
It's my fault now.
You just calm it down. You just lay it right back down. Just lay back down.
You were saying, Joshua, before I rudely interrupted you.
No, but getting those stories also in horror. You know, it's like I would like the film that we saw today. It'd be very interesting to see that in a queer perspective, where you know it's kind of already, you know, they're an established relationship or whatever. Although, I mean, I don't want to see any. I guess not more violence against queer people, but even committed by queer people. But you know, just like that, there are stories like that. You know what I mean? That there are all kinds of different stories, and all of us live them in all of our varying personalities and perspectives and persuasions, and you know, it's all. The human story is all encompassing, you know, so getting that opportunity, I would like to see movies like that where it's like, you know, the articles like, you know, where's Ian McKellen just playing like an 80-year-old gay dude, you know, like that's his life. That's what he lives like. So what kind of story can we tell from that perspective? You know, and there are novels, you know, I've read some great books that kind of started like that. You know, I read one when I was young that was like about this like 60-plus-year-old guy whose partner just died. And so the novel was about that, you know, about a person who had suffered loss, you know, and the gay part was... It was just, it was a gay character, you know, so it didn't really, because that kind of thing is not informed by that, you know, your sexuality is not going to inform your grief, you know?
Yeah.
So it was just kind of, you know, a very, I don't know, it was just, I would just like to see films like that. So that's why I shared that article and have to share it there. But okay, so that I think is a good way to transition, because we were talking a little bit about The Shining and about childhood trauma, and now we're talking about like queer people like having their childhood snatched away, to discuss with you, Marcella.
Yes.
About your life, your work.
My work is my life, and which is actually why I chose to name my company It's My Life. And that was because as a preventionist who had the privilege of going throughout San Diego County and talking to youth, to adult, and through adults about healthy relationships, what I constantly heard from, you know, everybody under the sun, especially youth, was whenever I questioned their decisions about a relationship, or you know maybe not the healthiest of behaviors, it was immediately defended with well, it's my life, right? And when we would dig a little bit deeper, and I would ask them other questions to see if you know, well, what does that mean? It's your life, right? What I would often hear over and over again is society talking right back to me, right? Well, my mama said, well, you know, people say, well, this is how we do. And it's just the same cycle repeating itself over and over and over. And so what I thought was even more interesting is that when I would give them space to literally talk about their lives, it was usually met with a lot of question as far as almost not trusting my intention, mm-hmm. right?
Right?
Why do you care? You know,
yeah.
This is about me now. Oh, are you taking notes? You know, what do you mean you want us to ask questions? What do you mean you want us to help you with activities, right? And I would often remind them, you know, I'm here for you,
right?
You know, I've been here, done that, and honestly, if I could go back, there are things that I would want to change, but that's for me. What would y'all want to change?
Right.
And so It's My Life really was inspired by the fact that we constantly move through life claiming to everybody, especially to ourselves, trying to convince ourselves that we're living our life.
Right.
When in actuality, we're living often for other people. And, you know, most of people like me who have been victims of adverse childhood experiences, ACEs,
yeah,
as you
ACEs.
Referred to
yeah,
them.
I love that. Yeah, that concept.
Yeah, it's that, you know, it's that childhood trauma that doesn't necessarily come at the hands of a, you know, an adult that was supposed to be trusted, whether this is a parent or a caregiver, that could be coming from their words or their lack thereof, mm-hmm. right? So when a child is, you know, raised in this type of environment where they're not seen and heard, and instead they're told what to think and do, then we lose what does it mean to live my life, and we're just kind of walking on eggshells of trying not to disrupt other lives. So my whole business is about talking about your life. You know, what does that mean? And really taking ownership and accountability of learning your own language, starting with your ABCs. And the ABCs for me are having awareness, boundaries, and consent. You know, really understanding that. Like, do you know how you even move in a relationship? Do you know your own boundaries and know that you have rights to them? And how do you ask for consent and seek it? Right? So when we start taking that ownership of our own life in this very simple way, we see that, damn, I really have been giving a lot of my power over to other people without even thinking about it. So in a very complex way, what I do is I just give you back, you know, the simplicity of being yourself and showing up for yourself. And in that same time, while you do so, you are showing up for youth, because as youth, it's easier to learn by watching than by listening, right? We hear so many things and they kind of negate themselves a lot of times.
Yeah.
But what we see is usually truth, right? You know, people can't hide who they are even when they try to, like in the movie we watched today, right?
Right, yeah. Yeah, well, and yeah, exactly. Like behavior, like actions. I mean, that's why that's a, you know, it's such a cliche, but they really do speak louder, you know, because that's... Mm-hmm. You know, how you treat me, how you talk to me, how you go about conducting your life says mm-hmm. a lot more than how you hope you want things to be or how you say you want things to be. So
yes.
I think that's why the work that you do, I do think is incredibly valuable and very, I think very, very tough because of the toxicity of the system that we live in, you know,
yes.
of the way that, you know, we're taught so much about, you know, we've talked obviously in this whole series that we've done here about like toxic relationships of mm-hmm. love, of what is normal and not normal, and the levels of dysfunction that we all think that we should accept in relationships or should accept in the way that we're treated. And we have to change that conversation in
Absolutely.
Order to, heal and, mm-hmm. and move on. So, I do encourage listener that you, find Marcella's site. It's mylife.biz, right?
Yes.
ITSMYLIFE.biz. Take the ACEs quiz. It's 10 simple questions, just kind of examining your experiences as a child mm-hmm. and how the adults in your life behaved or didn't behave or what they did or did not do. It can be very enlightening.
Absolutely is.
Connecting that to your own life and your own trauma, I think, is very powerful, you know, kind of waking up. And we were talking a little bit earlier before we went to the film. We had a little breakfast and we're talking about like fighting against like the ideas of normalcy. Mm-hmm. And I like this ACEs thing because a lot of people score, you know, something, at least yes, one thing least on this, one. If not more. Mm-hmm. I think I have like an 8.
Same.
So we're high scorers. Joe, you have to take it, and then we'll know how much trauma you have, you know.
My score is low. I've taken it.
Oh, you have. Okay.
Yeah, my score is like,
well, lucky you.
One or two, maybe less actually.
No, I'm kidding. Cuz it doesn't really matter. That's not what it's about, you know. Right. We're not playing oppression Olympics, you know, trauma Olympics. I'm just teasing you. I love
I know.
You, Joe.
I know. I,
want
I,
you
know.
To be
I love
well.
You too.
I see hear you. Yes,
I hear you.
I feel you.
I feel you. I affirm you. I'm speaking from the eye, from my experience.
But what's incredible is the amount of, like, that dysfunction is the true normal.
Right.
You know, that most people are going to score somewhere between a 1 and a 10 on this because it's just, there's just, we're complex.
We had to survive.
Yeah.
That's just the, you know, the reality of it, especially, you know, if you think about, our ages and looking back at our parents' ages and grandparents, they had to go through the depression. So if it wasn't our own parents, it was our parents' parents.
Yeah.
So they themselves had to go through it and you just had to survive.
Yeah.
You don't complain. You know, you don't talk back. You do your job. And at one time it made sense, but you see the consequences of those actions and what it actually is doing to the chemistry, you know, to our brains, to our bodies, and how it absolutely is changing, you know, how we relate to one another.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, I think it's very important that gets out there and more people become aware of those factors in their life and think about ways that they can seek, you know, healing from them or examine the way that they play out in their life now and how they can inflict that on others.
Exactly.
You know, not even on purpose. You know, it's not, it doesn't even have to be this
it
malicious thing.
Yeah.
So real quick before we take a break and get into the Invisible Man. How do you see this? Like, is this a program that you want to implement? Is there like, what is it that you want to see out there in the world? You know, besides like, you're kind of doing like sort of personal coaching kind of things, mentoring people through this, discussing like relationships and things like that. Cause, you have done work here with the Center for Community Solutions in the past, right here in San Diego. So obviously that had its own kind of program going on out in the world. But what do you see that you're building?
So for myself, it's two-parters. So it is absolutely primarily working with adults in understanding how they can become trusted adults within their community, in their neighborhoods.
So as mentors?
Yes, it is a mentorship program. And it's being trauma-informed. It's being understanding to the signs of trauma. And instead of reacting to youth as far as like, what's wrong with you?
Right.
It's taking that other approach of what happened to you and really just, you know, being those eyes and ears and not in a hyper vigilant. Thank you. Yes. Hello. It's in my brain.
It's okay.
But to be, you know, just that person who recognizes that something is off because, quite literally what happens to most of our youth, if they're growing up in an environment, whether it's their home or their neighborhood, or even sometimes their own school, if they are feeling threatened by someone or are being or are being threatened by someone, typically it is an adult. And so there's already going to be a lack of trust for other adults. And it's going to be this thought process of nobody cares. So when we show up, even in the most minor ways of recognizing that, you know what, their appearance is a little bit different within the last few months. I just want to check in. Or their behavior has been really off. Like, they used to say hello to me and be kind to me, and now they just give me these weird looks and such. You know, just this one little phrase of, hey, is everything okay, sends that message that not everything is okay, and somebody else takes notice and cares about that. So
it's teaching people to know some signs, recognize some signs.
Yes.
Okay.
Being that trauma informed. And then also the second part is to know the other resources within the community, because not all of us are going to feel comfortable being that voice and approaching that youth. Right. And I completely understand, but you know what organizations that are right around the corner that you can refer to this youth. You know, you can be another set of eyes and ears, so to speak. And then when it comes to youth, I think that as adults, we are just really missing the bar of not making sure that we are showing up as a community. We are leaving all the responsibility on their primary caregivers, who are typically, sadly, the ones who are usually causing the harm when it comes to ACEs, right? And whether that is intentionally or it's out of neglect or because they're just working long hours in order, again, to survive society.
That benign neglect, yeah.
Absolutely. It's just still the fact that if a child is feeling unseen and unheard in their environment, they're going to do whatever they can to feel seen and heard in their environment. And, you know, this will come out either in acting out and taking violent measures, or it's going to, they're going to start taking it by acting in, right? Taking it out on themselves, looking for relationships where, hey, you know, it might not be the best, but it's somebody who is seeing me and hearing me.
Right.
So this is where we're just having these conversations with youth about what is healthy and unhealthy, going back to those ABCs. So they should be having these conversations every year, mandatory, with the school and staff. They should be having them through a series of healthy relationship workshops in their class, as well as on every campus. There should be a safe space where they know that at any time they can go there and speak to a trusted adult if they wanted to. When we start showing up for youth, they start showing up for themselves.
I love that. Yeah, that's awesome. And then hopefully they can avoid some of the horrors that we've witnessed.
Right? They have to be what they see. That's what happens.
Yeah. So I love this is the part of our episode that kind of wraps up. You know, at the end, when you watch some movie and that it's at the end, it's like, if you or somebody you know is a victim of domestic violence, please call. So if people are interested in having you come out and do a workshop, do a talk at their conference, do some personal growth stuff, where can they find you?
Absolutely. The best place to find me is on the website. It's mylife.biz, B-I-Z. Also, you can email me at Marcella, M-A-R-C-E-L-L-A, at itsmylife.biz. I can also be found on Instagram, where I share a lot of tips and talks about how to normalize these type of conversations, normalize the dysfunction. Right?
I love that. Yeah. Which I find very, very important. Yay! So fun. Joe, have you learned so much?
I mean, yes.
Joe's embarking on a successful relationship right now. Well, for now. I mean, we don't really know him too well.
Who knows?
Yeah. Like I said, he likes to bowl, which, you know, Dexter did too. So cause and effect. No, that's not a cause and effect. That's clearly a red flag.
Yes.
That's all I'm going to say.
Huge red flag.
We did go bowling together recently.
I know. I saw photos. And I'm pretty sure you were held hostage.
I sent that to Joshua, and he's like, yeah, this is a killer.
Yeah, he sent me a photo. I'm like, serial killer, man.
I mean,
hold on.
But I'm not saying he's not welcome.
Will just ask this question. Did he have his own ball?
He has three.
Okay.
Serial
yes,
killer.
You're right. Sorry, Joshua. Yes.
He has three. He has his own shoes. He has a glove. He's got a rolly bag for it all.
Does he have one of those file things to, you know, like...
What?
There's like a thing that you put in the holes. No.
No, I don't think he has one of those.
That is a thing, though. I've seen people do that where they file.
Just,
it's like
dirty
for the holes. It's
dirty
for like
holes.
Where you hold it, you know? Like sometimes people have to file them. Or clean them up or something. I don't know. I've seen people doing
it. We played three games with some coworkers, and I got one strike the entire time. I was
good
very
job.
Satisfied with myself.
Congrats. You're so athletic. I love that.
You know what?
All right. Well, Marcella, we do thank you for sharing a little bit of your story and your work. I do think it's very important, and I want to, you know, give our listeners a little insight into that, and hopefully they can carry that into their own lives. But we will. So we will be right back to talk about The Invisible Man.
Hey, everybody.
What's up?
I'm here, too.
We are the Jersey Ghouls, a horror podcast based out of the Garden State. Join us on Jersey Ghouls for Marissa's scholarly conversations.
By the way, if you Google Psycho Female, you definitely don't get the name of the actress from Psycho. Join us on Jersey Ghouls for Nate's thrilling debate.
Why? Why are you so resistant against
because
it?
Because don't you start.
Join us on Jersey Ghouls for Jackie's love of 80s slasher movie Topless Scene.
Whoa, Jackie, this is a feminist podcast.
I know. I'm a woman. And as a woman, I appreciate a nice set of jugs.
Okay, but you shouldn't call them jugs.
Hooters? Bazungas? Tatas? Dirty pillows?
I like boobs too. Can I call them fun bags?
No! We're the Jersey Ghouls. You can find us on social media by searching Jersey Ghouls on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, SoundCloud, and iTunes. You can also find our blog and podcast on our website, jerseyghouls.com.
Can you see me? No, you can't.
This Surprise!
This is an auditory experience.
Yes. An auditory, yes.
Auditory. I don't know what I was trying to go
auditory.
For
auditory. I love auditory better.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. We should get some cameras in here, Joe. We could, like, do this, you know.
It'd
people
be
could
a,
watch us.
An auditory Amos.
Room. Yes. They should
auditory
see it.
Amos. Auditory Amos.
Anyways, we are back to discuss brand new movie, so spoiler the fuck alert, because there's going to be lots of spoiling of
this. Yeah, so don't listen to this unless you've seen Tit.
Yes, so The Invisible Man, 2020 science fiction horror film by Lee Whannell, who we love from, he has written lots of, well, we were talking because you were wondering what else, so he wrote Saw 2, Saw 3, also wrote Insidious.
And, oh, this guy's twisted.
Yeah, yeah. And now he's got
Spiral?
The Invisible Man.
Is he doing Spiral?
He's executive producer on Spiral.
Okay.
And he was on Jigsaw as well. The last Saw film.
Awesome.
So anyway, so we are talking about The Invisible Man today, starring the wonderful Elizabeth Moss.
Yes, the Scientologist. Elizabeth Moss.
It's true. I
yes,
know.
She is.
Oh, wow.
Just
but
like
she
you.
Won't
they
talk
let her
about
out
it.
Too. She won't talk about it because she knows that if she talks about it, she's going to lose people.
So, Elizabeth
Moss.
But
I bring it up.
Yeah, he wants everybody to
I'm
know.
An Elizabeth Moss truther.
They're gonna hunt us down now. So she's playing Cecilia Cass, and then Oliver Jackson Cohen is playing Adrian Griffin, the titular Invisible Man. And then there's other people. So, and the movie is about, you know, Elizabeth Moss' character has been abused by Adrian, and she escapes him, and then he seemingly dies. But did he really? Is she being followed around by an invisible person?
Yeah.
Yeah. What'd you think, Joe?
Oh, it was great.
Yeah.
I thoroughly enjoyed it. I do love the irony of us going to see The Invisible Man in IMAX.
Right.
But I think that was actually a really... I think the experience of seeing it in IMAX helped with the... helped the score be as effective as it was on me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And that 3D of like people walking around and such.
There's
cool.
one part where the dog Zeus barks and it's like you can hear it coming from the corner.
Yeah.
And I like turned over to where I thought the dog was. And it was also very effective for like the jump scares that were had.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a very, very, very good film, and very, very happy to have Marcella here to discuss and unpack everything that was going on, because I sat next to her, and Ashley, our dear friend Ashley, also joined
us as well. Yes, yes.
And I can just, like, I could just hear, like, parts where Marcella was like, deep inhale, deep exhale, man. Like, and then something happened, and I leaned to her, and I was like, this is a literal nightmare.
Yeah.
This is a literal nightmare for somebody.
Absolutely. Especially if you have lived it in any type of capacity or know someone who has. And that's the thing with media, right, is that it takes us back to those experiences. And so if there's any type of similarity,
Oh, yeah. Right? I can see this being very triggering.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You know, yeah. I mean, I definitely was triggered. I have had a couple of instances that were similar in experience, even in the very opening scene where she's, you know, hatched this plan to get out. And she has to be as quiet as possible, right? She has to be the one who's invisible.
Yeah.
Right? And it just really brought me back to just moments for that for myself, you know, not actually with a man, thankfully, you know, but as a child even. So, you know, with my own mother, you know, like sneaking out of my room type of thing for something that was just so simple, but immediately, like that psychological impact of being afraid to even leave. So yeah, the jumps you're talking about, I definitely took. And it was so funny because I was watching Ashley out of the corner of my eye, and there were a few times that it's like we were doing synchronized moves, right? Like we were literally covering our mouths and our faces and putting our knees up, and yeah, it was. And I can't remember a time recently where I've seen a movie that had me jumping so much.
Yeah, I agree. Right. I totally agree with that. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it had some very effective scares. I jumped quite a few times as well.
And not just for the sake of doing it that way, like it really added, like everything was just this build up.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the whole movie was very tense. Like, I mean, the first 10 minutes of it, I loved it because it's like you had no, so we were dropped into events already in motion.
Yeah.
You know, so you're seeing her and there's like the tense music and, you know, she's obviously trying not to wake this dude. You don't know anything about him, but you're assuming like, whoa, she's really terrified of him. And as it was going on and on, I found myself even not knowing anything about her story, like my heart was racing and I was just like like when she hit that fucking bowl, Zeus's bowl, you know,
like,
and it went
done,
across, I was
over.
Like
it's done, she's
I
dead.
Thought he was gonna come, you know. So it was so freaking tense, you know. It was so good, even though we knew nothing about what she was trying to escape
True.
From
how to be invested in it. Yeah,
already. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. Off the bat, like just ready for it. Ugh, delicious.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Elizabeth Moss does, you know, scared, frantic woman.
She does.
Like, very well.
Oh, yeah.
And I say that as someone who has not seen The Handmaid's Tale, so I don't know.
But you've seen the like, posters or footage,
exactly.
You know, where she's, like, you're staring intently at the camera, like, yeah. In this, you know, that one. The tears that never fall, but they keep welling and welling and welling. It's just like, it's so good. She's so good.
And the last time I saw Elizabeth Moss on the big screen was in Us, where she played, like, this really
The yuppie.
The
That's
little, like,
right.
Terrible yuppie woman, and but like she had one of the best moments of that whole film, where she was putting the makeup on and screaming quietly, like that's I felt like this whole film was just like a quiet whimper that like crescendoed to a scream.
Yeah.
And you know, again, I think we posted something on the Instagram of like horror films where a woman is like smiling at the end.
Oh yeah, I think it went. That's on our Facebook page. Brian.
Yeah, yeah, and that was like, oh, I love that. That's also what we got in this.
Smiling at the end.
Yeah, smiling
woman
at the end.
Smiling at the end. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, yes, yes. It is another one of those.
But yeah. So again, so I think that the trailer, you know, I think the trailer did a good job of not giving everything away, mm-hmm. but giving you just enough, and also did a good job of like, okay, if you are like in any way at all like triggered by the trailer, then it's like you probably shouldn't go. Like right. without saying trigger warning, they gave a good
oh,
enough.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know,
it was very heavy. It was very heavy.
It was very heavy, and I remember like I remember telling people like, oh yeah, I'm gonna go see Invisible Man this weekend. What's it about? I'm like, oh yeah, it's about this woman who thinks that her abusive boyfriend, who she's escaped from, is invisible and haunting her. And it's just like, and also the other thing about it too is that like we. Because of the trailer, you know, I immediately knew that he was, like, I already had the feeling that he was alive.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't get that feeling of, like, it's not a haunting.
Right.
Yeah, because it's very much, because haunting would imply that, like, there was some sort of, like, there was definitely the release of death. But that, like, even though it says that he died and he faked his death, we know better, so it's not truly a haunting in that way.
Mm-hmm.
No, yeah, not at all. But it's again an interesting going back to like Rebecca when we talked about Rebecca, yeah. Alfred Hitchcock's film at the beginning of this series, being haunted in a different way by a dead person.
Yeah, by a memory.
Yeah, by a memory. And so there is that possibility in the beginning when you're watching it. And that's the thing. The film could have went a lot of different ways. It could have really went that way where there was really nothing there and he successfully gaslighted mm-hmm. her, you know, from beyond the grave, you know, that he got his, like, revenge on her leaving him because he had already planted those, like, thoughts. You know, it could have mm-hmm. definitely went that way and been a whole other film. But obviously, you know, they're trying to reboot like H.G. Wells' original novel and the Claude Rains film. Like it's kind of, you know, it's Universal using those kind of ideas. Also like Hollow Man. Do you remember mm-hmm. that?
I do.
Some of that. That's where I thought they were going to go too when they showed the lab, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, again, spoiler alert. So he's invisible because he's wearing this suit made of like cameras, which is real technology.
Yes.
Like real stuff that they've been experimenting with.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That technology has existed on film Die Another Day, James Bond. You know this because
yeah.
of the Madonna song.
Madonna.
I was like, you know, because Madonna. But like they give James Bond an invisible car that is able to be invisible because tiny cameras are projecting what is outside. So like that whole thing is very much real technology that exists, and
that they want to exist.
Or like is being explored in some way. But I actually really liked how little we got of like the technology of the invisible suit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I would think we got just enough to where we weren't feeling like it was like jumping the shark in the middle of the thing. And then finally when the suit is revealed, you do get a little bit of it and a little bit of like, you know, sci-fi type vibes. But I feel like it did a really good job of creating that suspense and living in a true horror space mm-hmm. and not like crossing over completely into like tech sci-fi thriller.
Yeah, I think they did a good job of like the visual language because they show her at the very beginning kind of going through the lab. And obviously, you know, you're thinking Invisible Man. I'm thinking, OK, so it's a chemical thing he's created or something like in Watchmen because they yeah. showed the chamber with mm-hmm. like the weird mm-hmm. things. And I was like, so is that going to be it? Like it's some kind of electric thing that happens and he goes invisible or, you know, and kind of going, you know, the original, I think he's like a chemist and creates mm-hmm. like a, you know, something that, you know, makes him invisible and then he like can't come back from it or something. I have not seen that. Yeah. Since the 40s, when you know, I originally saw it.
It's an irreversible process.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Although he does become invisible, like, you know, he becomes visible again in the end. I don't know. It's been so long since I've seen it. We should watch that now. Just for fun, because it is a good movie. Claude Rains, fun times. Anyways, I like that they kind of gave some of that visual cues, because I was not thinking suit at all. But now when I think back on it, they did show like an arm, like there was some kind of thing like in the, you know, the foreground, but you're focused on her,
yeah,
you know, running through this thing, so running through the lab. But I just think they did a good job of keeping like the nature of the invisibility mm-hmm. you know, till that part where she like throws the paint on him mm-hmm. you know mm-hmm. That was really cool. I was like, oh, it's a suit, and you kind of saw the
yep.
like the pattern. And then when it's really unveiled later, when she finds it in the lab, the extra version of it, I was like, ah, oh, that's what that was. That's mm-hmm. what all the, like the spider web, it looked like, you know what I mean? Like
it's a honeycomb.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But it's like, it is definitely going to activate someone's trypophobia. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, oh. It was very creepy that way.
Yeah, and I thought that was really, I thought that was very effective. I was like, ooh, they're like, because the suit itself is not anything horrific, but because they're going to tap into why people feel uncomfortable with the little
all the holes,
the holes, and the holes are moving, their little eyes. Yeah. And
like, it is creepy. Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought that the biggest thing that was interesting to me as far as the technology and his capability to have this at his, at his fingertips, right? Like, you know, we assume that he's the creator, right? This is his
lab. Yeah, he's
and
like
such,
a tech
right?
optical technology.
Right. Like, you know, and so here he has this incredible invention, and what is he doing with it?
Right, harassing a woman that doesn't want to be with him.
Are you kidding me, guy? Right? I mean, just the need to be in control, right?
Yeah, that narcissistic sociopath.
Yeah, absolutely. It was such an interesting reality of how a person can be victimized and, you know, how she even says at one point, like, why me? Yeah, right. You know, why
I'm
me?
Ordinary.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm just this girl from the suburbs.
Absolutely.
Like, why does it have to be me?
Yeah. And it's, and it is that it's just, it goes that mentality of like, because I can't have you. Right. So it's like, that's all I want and everything. And so, yeah, it was just, it baffled my mind of, you know, is that us in society, right? Are we all like the, you know, why us? Why us? Well, because I can have you.
Right.
Right?
Because I can, because, I mean, and again, like, as with all mad geniuses in film and media, they save the best toys for themselves. And that's how they use them. And, It was a good portrayal of that, and not denying that he is this like genius, and the beauty also the beauty of that house too, like the bedroom alone where it like has this like little alcove that juts out with glass all over
oh
it,
my
so
gosh.
It's gorgeous.
It's gorgeous because like the house itself is like made for maximum visuality, right? So
yes.
Like glass windows, mirrors, cameras everywhere. There's a lot of places where you can see into and out of, but in that it's like also this prison that he's built for her.
Oh, it's a huge prison.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. Absolutely. No, that's a very good point. I like how the film, there was a lot of really nice shots that played with that, that played with like the ideas of absence, of invisibility, you know, or of visual,
but not.
Like, or, you know, yeah, exactly. Transparency or not. Like there was that scene where they were in the kitchen. She was in the kitchen cooking. Yeah. This was early in the film where she's cooking breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh gosh, what was his name? Her, the guy
James.
That she was saying, James, the guy that she was.
Aldous Hodge is
yes,
the name of the
yes,
actor.
Yes, yes. So he's her childhood friend, and he's a cop. Just to throw that out there, that's what he does, which plays a little bit, obviously, significance in the film.
Mm-hmm.
But he comes into the kitchen. They kind of talk, and it didn't do the usual thing where it's like camera on her for a bit, cooking camera on him for a bit, camera, you know, like back and forth for their conversation. It was this long shot of them standing in the kitchen, and then he steps out, and it just kind of hangs on that of like her. It was a weird angle where it's like she's standing there, and there's this huge empty space of the kitchen, you know, of like of his like stepping away, that just. I don't know why I thought it was so significant, but I'm like watching it. I'm like, this is really creepy.
Because we're supposed to figure, we're supposed to
that
look
he's
for
there.
That he's there.
Yeah.
It's the same, the shot that was similar to that one, that was that the same thing in the kitchen right before the pan?
Right before the fire.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So
he turns up the gas.
Yeah.
We
so,
assume.
We assume. So the shot that was interesting in my mind, that's similar, was when she's putting her clothes away after her apparently going shopping for new wardrobe. Mm-hmm. She's putting her her clothes away. She's going to her, you know, she's living in this office that, you know, he's made up for her. He goes to her little rack where she's putting her clothes. And then, like, we lingered mm-hmm. on the rack itself.
Mm-hmm. While she stepped away.
While she stepped away. She goes out of frame, comes back again. And I'm, like, staring at it. And I'm like, am I supposed to
yes.
see something?
Is this
something I'm supposed to see? And then to go back to the kitchen, the way it was framed looked yeah. like shots from Hereditary.
Yeah.
When you're looking at the family as if you're
Absolutely.
Looking into like a dollhouse.
Yes.
And
yeah.
so the way that it was framed, I thought it was just so interesting to create that kind of tension and yeah. like for us to
be just watching her.
That we're watching her, but also that we are trying to look for him.
Yeah.
That we are looking at nothing is happening, presumably. Nothing is happening. But we're trying to get the hint. So like yeah. when the knife falls, but it doesn't make a sound.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And all of that happens with it. Yeah. That was so effective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. No, I think that's a very good point. That we are, even though we have yet to get confirmation that he really is there, really is invisible, it's setting it up. The visual language is that he is this present. He's there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I just, yeah, they just did a very good job with that. And the panning of the camera, too. The use of, like, how they would kind of be on her, and then it would pan away,
mm-hmm.
and it hung out for a while, like, right at the beginning, and then it came back, and she was dressed.
Yeah.
But it was like, what were we doing there? You know, and then it happens again, and it just pans to the long shot of the hallway, and you're mm-hmm. just like,
mm-hmm. yeah.
What am I looking for?
What are we looking for? Like, mm-hmm. what's going to happen? Mm-hmm. It was just very effective. There was just a lot of very, I think, well-done angles and setups that were these, like, long shots of, like, the whole room,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
not this breaking it up back and forth. It was just, like, you were just always aware of, like, presence.
Yeah.
I just thought it was very, very nice.
And very effective use of special effects, like the
yeah.
at the end when the Invisible Man is coming back to James's house to kill James's daughter Sydney, and then he ends up getting beaten by by the Invisible Man, like, just like you can hear every punch landing and then the blood just like showing up, but it's not coming from anything. Like, all of that was really effective. And what was also interesting was, like, I was kind of thinking that the suit or it would make more sense to me, I should say, that if it was some sort of chemical thing that he had to ingest, that would also lead to some sort of, like, brute strength. Because I think we're just supposed to believe that whoever's wearing the suit, like, they just happen to have those, like, powers to be able to, like, take people down.
Right.
You know, like, have, like, these, like, it's, like, basic martial art type things. And, you know, I thought that was fascinating. Because, like, the hallway, we all see that thing in action movies where it's, like, in a hallway and, like, you know, various people coming in and out.
Right.
And I thought that was done so well in this film where it's, like, we don't know what's going on. And so
mm-hmm.
all of a sudden people are just dropping dead.
That was very cool.
Yeah. But
and it was glitching.
It was, like, yeah. glitching. Mm-hmm. And, yeah. So I thought that, like, the camera work, the use of special effects were very good. So
I agree.
I mean,
yeah.
That's not all I have to say, but, like, someone else talk.
No, I mean, we're conversing.
It was such a good film and so very well shot. I do have a question for Marcella.
Great. Mm-hmm.
So as someone who works in this space and does the work that you do, mm-hmm. can you tell me a little bit about, like, just the taking away the, like, the fantastical parts of the film where she's being chased by an invisible man, tell us a little bit about, like, what that means to be someone who ends up in that relationship. Because, like, she also had, like, a lot of access. Whether she got that access on her own or not, she had codes to things. Like,
right.
she was, like, a prisoner, but also not a prisoner. In many ways. Like, she was able to get to places. She had access to the cameras on her phone.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, what does that mean in terms of, like, you know, he had to have given that to her, or she had to find out or something. So, I don't know. Can you speak a little bit to, like what it means to be in that type of relationship and also eventually to be out of it.
Absolutely. You know, and honestly, the fantastical stuff is just Hollywood's way of bringing a real life message to us, you know, and it has been done before, even in Twilight. You know, so many people
yes.
were
mm-hmm.
so obsessed about this romantic relationship that is, you know, meant to be and will last forever. And when you take away the layers of the, you know, of this, like you said, the fantastical part of it, of being a vampire and werewolf and, you know, that it's, oh, this is a really unhealthy relationship.
Right.
These behaviors are really questionable. Yeah. And why is my kid all about this relationship? And here's my question to youth for so many years and why I started to have these conversations, especially with adults, is that nobody's having them with youth. We basically have Once Upon a Time TVs now are screens that are, you know, at our hands, you know, 24/7. We have this opportunity to watch media tell us stories, and without any conversation about what we're watching, we normalize these relationships to be our truth, our romance. So in this particular
that's what
one,
it's supposed to be like.
Yes,
you know,
exactly.
Having people fighting over you or
jealousy.
You know, the torturous.
If somebody's not jealous, I should be concerned because that must mean they don't really love me.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
This is a conversation about you on Netflix.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like,
oh,
their violence.
Yes.
Their violence is indicative of their caring, you know.
Yes.
And I don't even mean
yes.
physical violence, but emotional violence,
yes.
you know, the controlling, I you know, that is violence.
Absolutely.
You know, it is a signifier of
I want
their
someone
care.
Who cares about me enough to harm me,
yeah.
basically.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Or others.
Oh, my gosh,
or
are
others,
you kidding
yeah.
me? Like the whole Joker and Harley Quinn,
oh, Jesus,
people will
yeah.
say relationship goals.
Yeah.
Right? Really? Really? That's your relationship goal? It's a very unhealthy relationship, as was, you know, what we recognize to be this relationship in the movie when she does open up to her sister and her childhood friend James about what went on in the relationship, because we find out that her sister knew nothing, right? Her sister picks her up in the middle of the night, has no idea why. She's rescuing
yeah.
her,
yeah.
right? Like, what's going on?
From this ideal life,
the
probably
ideal
to her.
Ideal life,
yeah.
right? This guy has money. She's, you know, she is
He's
so
famous.
Well off.
He's, yeah.
Absolutely. And why all this secrecy? And what we discover so many times is that there has to be the secrecy
yeah.
in order to normalize it, in order to keep it going. And so when she tells her sister, and we find out that little by little, she was losing parts of herself.
Yeah.
And I love that also going back to the imagery of the movie and the direction and how he sets up these scenes and such. We absolutely become her. We start to question, did I see something? Wait, did I see an arm?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Is he really right there? You know, and I don't know about y'all, but there were a couple times that I found myself even looking at the screen, and then they would show me her face, and her face is all wild-eyed, and my eyes were the same. Because you're looking for, like, well, what's there? What's there? Is he supposed to be there? Right? So we're already starting to question, to doubt, right? And that's exactly what she starts doing. And without the fantastical part of him being invisible, that's exactly what it feels like for a victim of this type of violence, is that when you as the sister, as a sibling, as a friend of this person finds out that this ideal relationship is not all what you thought it was, then you're more likely to be like, come on, it wasn't really that bad. You're crazy. No, you're being ridiculous,
mm-hmm.
right? So now if I'm starting to discount what you know is truth, then you start discounting yourself. You start disbelieving it. So you're less likely to report it, right? You're also less likely to leave. You're more likely to go back, you know? So it was such an interesting show of the realities of losing yourself, you know, because not only did she start to question her story and start to kind of lose it, but she literally started to lose herself. She started to look really bad, y'all. Yeah. I mean, she looked really, really, really bad by the time she meets her sister in that restaurant, right? And so when what happens in that restaurant happens, what you see across a table from her sister, you almost don't discount for a second. She's crazy. Of course she's crazy. Of course she did it. Nobody in their right mind would ever question that she's the one that we should have been watching all along, right? And so I think it, you know, a lot of times what I love, what I took away from is that, yeah, really be pay attention to the appearance and behaviors of people,
yeah.
Right? Because people don't lose themselves for no reason. Mm-hmm. You know, when mm-hmm. we're happy, you know it, right? When, you know, you start either becoming way too much of what you were or less than what you were, question it, right?
I like that. That's advice, good. You know, to keep, you know, to watch out for each other, you know, especially people that, you know, check in with your happy friends as well.
Yes. Yes.
It's interesting. I can't remember if anywhere in the film they mentioned gaslighting. Did they actually use the word?
No.
No.
Which is kind of unfortunate because I do wish that they would have, because that's what they're defining throughout this film is like, he is trying to make me feel and look crazy, you know? And I thought, this is such a great way to kind of talk about that, because we're just living in a time where we are all being made to feel insane. Yes. You know, we're constantly being told, no, I didn't say that. Well, here's video footage. No, that's not me. You know, like, you know, that was never said. This never happened. That never happened, you know, and it's just, as a people, as like a populace, we're being, you know, politically, you know, being just...
Oh, absolutely. You're guilty. There's nothing to see here. He's fine.
Yeah. It's just frightening. So,
well, you don't.
I like the concept.
And
I'm talking about it.
Where it all goes downhill, right? If we want to, you know, depending on whether or not this is the intention of the director, but where it all kind of starts to happen and where she really starts to think that maybe something's going wrong is in the kitchen with a gas stove.
Right.
You know, or the gas is turned all the way up. And then from there, that's like the beginning, the literal flashpoint of when everything starts to happen. He starts to slowly make himself known to her.
That's a good point, actually. Yeah. So kind of a subtle, you know, without like, you know, because again, they don't need to hammer anybody's head.
It's also such a buzzword right now.
It's
and
true.
It's happening, but it's, and that's why it's in the consciousness, but it's such a buzzword. So it's like, we need to, I like that it was not mentioned, because it's just being illustrated.
It's just being illustrated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, that's a good point. It's just, it's nice to give people like a language, you know, to use.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Especially because so many of us really are aware until it becomes a problem, you know, but if you're not recognizing that it's a problem at all, you know, that's when we need to have these conversations before there is one, right?
Well, and that's the thing, when you're already living in a culture like that, that makes you question your sanity. Or like, I think, you know, obviously I think particularly for women who, you know, we live in an oppressive patriarchy. So, you know, you're kind of already taught to be like, to question yourself, to apologize, to assume that, maybe I'm speaking out of turn here. Or maybe I don't know what I'm talking about, or I'm sorry, but, or, you know, so it's like, it's just, it's easier for us to immediately go to that place, to immediately question our own sanity before we go, no, you're a fucking fuck.
Right.
You know, and getting out.
Mm-hmm.
Let's speak a little bit to, the trope, like in horror, obviously she's getting out, you know, she's like, you know, trying to escape. But I'm interested in what you know, because I think people would watch the film and, you know, like, why, what am I trying to say? Like, just what you think of her as a character, I guess, about like the things that she does in it. You know, do you know what I'm trying to... What am I trying to get at? Or maybe no, don't, maybe not even talk about her. Maybe about like why other people end up in these, staying in these kinds of relationships. What do you think?
I think that when she's sharing her experience with the sister and the friend is when we're starting to get those layers of, you know, how someone can be groomed into this kind of relationship.
Grooming, that's a good
right?
point. Yeah.
And so they, you know, they met in the simplest of ways. They, you know, she was someone just happened to be at a party with him. Probably didn't talk about anything in particular. But what she did mention was that she was just somebody, you know, who was like a simple girl, like, a, you know, and that is very attractive to someone who has power and wants to take control over another person, right? Once again, this could be learned behavior from their childhood where they had a lack of power themselves. So this is definitely something that they want to have in relationships. It makes them feel seen and heard. Or, you know, they can be, you know, just completely a sociopath type of person where there are no, you know, feelings and such. Like, why wouldn't a person cater to me? Why wouldn't they mold themselves to me? Grooming them is actually a gift, in a sense, right. In my eyes. I have all this money that I can share, right?
Yeah, I thought there was a little bit about that. Like, I don't, the college that she went to, Cal Poly
Architecture.
Yes.
Is that a real... Does anybody know anything about that?
Well, I'm sure, like, one of the Cal Polys, which is, like, you know, the system of schools and in the university system.
So,
I think
a polytechnic? Is
yeah,
that, like...
Cal okay. Poly, like, that's what the school's called. It's, like, Cal Poly, like, Cal Poly SLO, Cal Poly San Luis Obispo, for those who are not from California, or Cal Poly Pomona. So, there are all these places where you can... It's a more of a technical school. So, she does... And because she's an architect, you know, she does have... she is a professional, a young professional, just like him, who is also... he's, you know, on... And that's the other thing, too, is that, like, it's the epitome of, like, tech bro culture, mm-hmm.
right?
Is him being this narcissist.
Well, that's what I was trying to get at, because I was wondering... Because I didn't know what to say, like, I feel like... Sometimes people look down on certain types of schools, you know, like technical. Mm. Like, I'm not sure if that's what we were supposed to be picking up. Because, you know, when she walks into his lab, there's like a wall of diplomas and certifications and things that clearly he's earned and built this little thing to himself. It looked like it was like 4x4 or something. I mean, it was like 16 or 20, like in your face, like, this is my education. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Of like, this is my intelligence literally on the wall. You know, and I was just wondering, you know, if they were giving us some of that kind of language that, like, obviously without saying it, he feels morally and intellectually superior to her and that he is doing her a favor.
Right.
You know, that, like, because when they have that whole conversation, like, I'm just a suburban girl. I really do think that they're kind of telling us, you know, a little bit that she is valuing. We both see. Look at that. We both had a moment like that. Herself differently to him.
Mm-hmm.
You know that he's rich, powerful, smart. Like, why does he want her? You know, but obviously, like, there is a preying on that. You know, like, from him. You know that he's superior. He's a god amongst men.
And
know?
Interestingly enough, like, they did a really good job in casting for that as well, because, you know, without taking anything away from her, I mean, let's be real, like, this guy is extremely good looking, you know? And that's another thing, is that as a society, we're almost told to look away from those who are so good looking, because how could they ever cause something so ugly?
Right.
Right? That's not possible.
Yeah.
Right? So I love that you also had mentioned, you know, the equating one's self worth with another's, you know, smarts, because I did think that as well. You know, she, as she's spiraling downwards, nobody's believing her. They're saying things like, he's dead,
right?
And that's it. Yeah. So that's it. Like, we don't even have a discussion anymore. I don't even need to talk to you because he's dead. Like, they're
and
not.
And you're $5 million
listening.
Richer, so move on.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
Get on with it, right?
Yeah.
And so, but what I thought was so interesting is that as she's keep spiraling. Is that also a comparison a lot of times? Is that smart means powerful and right-minded?
Right, yeah, absolutely.
And dumb is, well, she's, of course she's crazy, yeah, you know? Because nobody was taking her seriously at all,
yeah,
you know?
Even people that have known her whole life.
Absolutely,
yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, yeah, I thought that was really interesting, as well as... what I loved ultimately is the thing that she was trying to, you know, like she was constantly questioning within herself, her own sanity and such, was what eventually led her to find him, which mm-hmm. is following her intuition.
Yeah.
Right. And I love that because she sensed every single time when he was in the room,
yeah,
or what we at least assumed that he was in the room, because then all of a sudden yeah, something happened, right?
Yeah. She's trusting herself.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Right. And so I think that's the biggest thing a lot of times why people become victims and how we're easily groomed, because we are told not to trust ourselves. And
yeah,
this starts
yeah,
at a very young age.
Very young.
Right?
Yeah.
Like for myself, growing up in a household, you know, it starts even young with, say that you're kind of chilly, you're kind of cold in your own home and such. And you say something about it, or I'm hungry. And immediately, you know, you yelled back with, oh, it's not cold in here. Oh, be quiet. We just ate, you know, so and so much time ago, right? So you start not trusting yourself. And so it was the same thing with her. She's constantly being told, no, this is the way it is. He's dead. Don't trust yourself. But ultimately, yeah, what ends up, you know, tuning us all in is the fact that she does trust herself.
Yeah.
So I think that's a really good message, you know, to share with people. If you feel like something's wrong, yeah, yeah, probably right.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. 100%. 100%. I remember in the beginning when, like, after he died and they said that, you know, she was going to inherit this money, we just need your bank account information. I'm like, don't do it.
Yeah, no. Look, the fact that...
I don't trust this.
What? How did the letter even show up there?
Right?
Oh,
exactly.
Come on. No.
Yeah.
Done.
Yeah. There were a few moments in this that made me, like, you know, just stupid horror movie moments to help keep the plot along, like that one.
Yeah.
Like, I would have questioned that a lot more. Like,
she opened it up and it wasn't sealed.
It wasn't
right.
Sealed.
Yeah, I was very concerned by that. And then, like, when she finds the suit, girl, I mean, immediately, I would have put that fucking thing on and lied in wait. You know what I mean? Like, it was just kind of weird, like, how, I mean, obviously it fit for the final,
right,
you know, and we don't know. Maybe she was kind of plotting that she, because he's such a narcissist, that, you know, she understands him better than he understands her. Because that was the whole thing at the end where he's like, oh, I know you better
yeah,
than you know yourself.
Yeah.
And just like, no, she fucking knows you, dude. And
yeah,
you're not going to see this coming
no,
at
yeah,
all.
Which is why I was like, which is why when she like puts the suit in that bag in the crawl space that we see in the beginning of the, film, I'm like, oh, he's going to come back and fuck this up. You know, like
right,
some, he like knows where she keeps her hiding places.
Oh, yeah. I
thought he was going to be like looking for this Celia
yeah,
or
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah,
and
yeah. But he didn't, because yeah, he trusted so much in his own control of her that she couldn't like trick, you know what I mean? Even though she escaped, I think he still, because he was doing everything to her that he thought he knew her better.
Yeah.
So I agree. I like that. That's a fantastic message to kind of wrap this conversation up on, is that, you know, trust yourself, trust, you know, if your relationship's not going the way you think it should be going, or you're in a situation, like, trust yourself. And the age old lesson in so many horror films: believe women. Believe them. Believe their stories. Even if a woman is full-on bonkers out of her mind,
right,
get her help then, you know,
right,
but believe her first. Listen to their stories. You know, I mean, every day, you know, at my workplace, people don't say all kinds of stuff. And our job is to go, uh-huh, great. So let's tackle the way this is making your life dysfunctional,
right,
you know, like, how can we have conversations about that, you know, because we have, you know, you get all kinds of people that, you know, we had a woman whose husband's voice was talking to her all the time. He had died and was talking to her all the time, but she didn't want to fix that. You know, his voice was comforting. It was the other voices that are the problem. Well, guess what? We solved both issues, you know, so it's like, even if you think somebody's bonkers, maybe still, you know, hold their hand, help them get the help that they need, whatever
yeah,
it is. So believe women. because they're probably telling the truth.
Right.
Yeah.
No, I like that. I like that because at the end of the day, you know, they're going to still tell you exactly what they want. You're going to hear it, right? It's if you at least give them the space to do that.
Absolutely. Were there other points? Because I love that you made some notes. So I do want to hit any last thing before we stick a pin in this.
I was looking to see if there was anything in particular, but no, I think we covered everything.
Everything that you wanted to discuss. Awesome. Well, I'm glad that we got the opportunity to see this film. I'm going back and forth on if I want to see it again. It was so tense. Like, it was great. Mm. I really recommend that people see it. 100%. It's got my vote. It would be difficult to watch again because it was just, you know, although it had a good payoff because you're waiting. Because it's like so many films where you're waiting for, you know, when the lead character's not being believed about something, but you mm-hmm. know it's coming, mm-hmm. that they will, everybody will fucking know, you know? Right. So you're, like, waiting for that moment to happen. It did have a good payoff for that, you know, where it was like, she's right, and now I'm fucking dead.
Right, yeah.
You know, it has, like, some good moments like that, but it was still, it was very tense and very, you were just with her. Winnell built such a great world, and that you really 100% believed the technology, you believed the abusiveness of, like, the relationship, mm-hmm. even though it wasn't shown, he was never shown, like, past, like we didn't get that, like you usually mm-hmm. get in films where there's going to be flashbacks to the violence against her. We didn't need that. We were believing her story. We were buying that, and I
yes.
think that's very important.
That's very true. We didn't see him actually, outside from, like, you know, smashing her sister's car window to get her. We never really saw the previous violence,
because she alludes to it by saying, yes, he would hit me, among other things. Mm-hmm. And so there's all of this, like, stuff there that's, you know, we don't need to necessarily see it on the screen, you know. Right. And even when he is violent, like against the girl, because he punches her when he's invisible to blame mm-hmm. To blame the lead character, we don't see him doing it,
right.
Yeah.
You know? So it's very, I don't know, just the way they kind of played with that, I thought was very clever. So I don't know. I definitely probably will see it again anyways, just cause, you know, you want to go back and see if, like you were saying, if some of the scenes had something going mm-hmm. on or not.
Mm-hmm.
But it was definitely a tough watch at times.
Yeah. It was so, a tough
trigger
watch.
Warning, trigger warning.
It's also interesting warning. That you say about the ending, because interestingly enough, like, while I was there, as far as, like, you know, I get it, girl, I get it, you know, like, you knew it. How are you going to get him to admit it? You tried, he didn't, you know. But I think it came down to the same old age story, as far as, like, she had to take it into her own hands.
Yeah.
And so nobody is ever really going to know that he was this monster, right? Because he committed suicide.
Right.
And she kind of just gave him this easy out, right? Like, she even got her friend to go along with it. Like, it sounded like he committed suicide, right?
But she avenged her sister. You know,
yeah,
she
and I totally get that. Yeah, but isn't it, like, it's still kind of like, yeah. Ugh, it sucks. Like, nobody knows. And so it just still, for me, it was almost, goes back to our justice system, where even if they're caught, do they one, take the accountability at all? No. And two, do they really get the justice that they deserve?
Right.
In this case, at her own hands, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. In a revenge fantasy horror film. Yeah, of course.
Right. Exactly.
No, absolutely. I think about it all the time, watching, like, things like Snapped and watching, you know, women's stories play out, where you're like, if she wouldn't have killed him,
yeah,
you know, maybe there would have been, you know, people would have known, but instead they're martyred, you know. But it's like, they, in order to save themselves, like, women have to do what they have to do, you know.
Exactly.
People in these situations, you know, that commit murder or whatever, you know, in order to get to save their own selves, mm-hmm. it's like, you know, that they've made that choice,
right?
You know, so I get what you're saying about the justice of, like, everybody knowing the truth.
Right. Well, and so that's what I'm wondering, though. I'm wondering if there was a reason for that, because she did take the suit with her. Is there any kind of sequel, any kind of any continuation of this story at all.
If they want to, they'll figure it out.
Okay.
You know what I mean? It's horror.
It was interesting.
Yeah, there's some other brother somewhere who's just vengeful, you know. You know, they will find a way, you know, the father, the mother next time, it'll be the invisible woman, you know, who just wants to revenge her darling son's death, who they had some kind of weird incestuous relationship,
oh,
you know,
Lord.
You never know what's going to happen. It's horror. They'll find a way to bring it back if they want to. If this makes enough money, there'll be a sequel, but there doesn't need to be.
Right.
It's encapsulated.
It's fine as it is.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah. She knew he wasn't going to admit narcissist. And so she had to take things into her own hands.
Totally.
Anyways, well, this has been very fun. I'm really glad that we had the opportunity to kind of look at it through this lens. And obviously, this is a film about violence, about sexual violence, and the ways that trauma informs our lives and how we, you know, have to escape from it, you know, wrapped up in kind of a cool retelling of The Invisible Man. So thank you, Marcella, so much again for coming on.
Thank you all. It was
dear
amazing.
Listener, again,
it was awesome.
It's My Life. Everything will be linked in the show notes below. I'm pointing down so people know because they can see this. Joe.
Yeah.
How you doing over there?
I'm good. I just, you know, again, we can't stress enough that if you are in this situation and, you know, please reach out to your people, do what you can to extricate yourself and seek help. So, you know, please do what you can to put yourself in better circumstances.
Yeah.
Yes, because I will definitely stress, because I don't think we've stressed this enough at all, is that as much as trauma that we have talked about today, the beautiful thing about this brain of ours is that it has the capability to change. We are so resilient,
we really
right?
are. Yeah.
So it's just a matter of having to flip the script, learn something new, learn about ourselves most especially, and, you know, have healthier relationships starting with ourselves.
I love it. I love
Absolutely.
It. All right. Well, thank you again, Marcella. Joe, as always. Oh, my God. I adore you, Joe.
I adore you too.
I adore you too much.
I adore Marcella.
I adore you.
We all adore each other.
Yes.
The Mutual Adoration Society closes another meeting. Good night. Good night. Good night.
Fright School is produced by Joshua Napier and Joe Farron. Our intro was edited by Davey Boy Productions. Our logo was designed by Jamie Channel Guzman. Episodes are edited and engineered by Joe Farron. Fright School is produced in terrifyingly beautiful San Diego, California.
Ha 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 ha